shitting.
This is the way.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome. I just have to ask, did you know that there are 100 years in a century? Water boils at 100 degrees Celsius. There are 100 tiles in a standard game of Scrabble. An NFL field is 100 yards long. The most points ever scored in an NBA game was 100. The Roman numeral for 100 is C. And after this next hour, there will officially be 100 episodes of this damn show. Hello and welcome. We are the Godfathers of Podcasting. It is Thursday, May 19th. This is episode 100. And in case y'all didn't know, we didn't start doing this shit 100 episodes ago. Oh no, cool cats and kittens. We've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. As always, you can check out archives of this show on any major podcast provider. The videos are always on godfathersofpodcasting.com. While you're there, go buy some merch. If you want to message us right now, because we're live, the number's on the screen, 437-375-2000. Send us your feedback, questions, whatever you got. If it's good, we'll read it on the air. My name is Donnie Da Silva. Hello. It's my honor and pleasure to introduce two very special men, the Bradley Cooper and Ed Helms, to my Zach Galifianakis. This is Notorious D.I.D. Chris Tidwell and your bro, Danny O.
I guess I would be the one missing the tooth, most definitely.
I didn't even think of that.
10 times 10 is 100.
Oh, look at you with your.
Hey, I just got to throw one in there. How much time do you take to find all these things that are about the number that represents the episode of the show?
100 seconds.
Makes sense. It's kind of crazy that we don't have Century as our guest today. Shout outs.
We should have booked Century, actually.
I know, but we have a really dope guest coming up regardless. But shouts to Century, though, as we do our Century episode.
Century is a Toronto-based musician. You can check her out on all socials. And she just launched some new shit on Spotify, actually, like this week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, she keeps busy, man, and we're working on some new shit together.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, no, she's my go-to, man. She's dope as fuck, so I got to get her on joints that require that beautiful vibe, you know?
Gentlemen, it's been a week. How the hell are you?
Oh, I mean, I'm still surviving. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out how to talk with this tooth in my mouth. It has been a week.
You still got the fakey tooth, the hockey player tooth?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, you know what? I forgot. That's how good it looks.
I got an appointment tomorrow. This is actually my hit and my shit all at the same time for this week. I got an appointment to finally talk to the magic man who's going to, you know, do the implant and figure out when. So that's the hit. And the shit part is I'm going to find out how much it's going to fucking cost. And that is definitely going to be the shit part.
Wow. So that's just like the relief. So you just got the interim champion in there, eh? That's pretty good for Tempas. Oh, wow.
Damn. He goes from looking like Sons of Anarchy to rookie NHL player.
Go from looking to from Sons of Anarchy to Nephew of Anarchy.
So there's lots of stuff that's been going on this past week. We had spirited discussion off air, folks, leading up to tonight's episode about all the different things that are going on and what to talk about. And what not to talk about, because there are very serious things going on in the world this week, and we will touch on those. But before we get too heavy and too serious, there are a few things out there that I have to throw at you guys. And you know what? Because there's so much going on, maybe we should just go rapid fire. As the world is trying to recover finally from COVID-19 and the global pandemic, and the world is finally looking like it gets back to normal. What the fuck is monkeypox? Bro, not ready to do this again, man.
And apparently like bunch of cases in Quebec or something like that.
I ain't ready.
It's wrong It's wrong. It's wrong. Like the fact that it's even called monkeypox to begin with, yeah. it leads me to believe, like, what the hell are y'all doing with some wild animals out there again? I mean, did nobody learn? Like, you cannot go messing with, like, you know, bats and shit like that. Now we got monkeypox. Like, come on. This is ridiculous.
So, dog, I have to admit that with all of the shit that's been going on, I've been trying to spend a lot less time paying attention to the media. What the fuck's monkeypox?
Dude, it's like the biggest story on the news right
now. I'm not. Listen, I've had enough bad news. I don't know about this monkeypox, bro. That's just crazy.
It's some racist shit is what it is.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's what it came
down to. No, seriously, the way the news is like reporting this whole thing, it's like, oh, monkeypox has made its way into North America. Here's a disease that's mostly known for being in
Africa. Africa, right.
And rarely getting out of Africa.
And rarely getting out of there. It's like, okay, like, I don't know why we need
we need, because it's not like COVID didn't do a hell of a lot of damage to Asian communities all over the world. That we now need something else to make people hate black people. That's
the really fucked up thing about monkeypox. When you want to talk about like poor nomenclature, it's called monkeypox, but it's typically contracted by contact with rodents. Mm-hmm. So why is it not Mickey Mouse pox or some shit? Like the name is very deceiving.
Because Disney will fuck you up if you decide to go after Mickey Mouse.
They will lawyer up. Right? I'm not ready for another pandemic. That's all I can say.
No,
we're not out of this one.
I know, man. We're not even
out. No, get your monkeypox vaccine. Get your monkeypox shots. Oh, like, man. Everybody, get out there. Get your monkeypox shots. I need to hear that lyric in a new song. In a new song, Dan.
I'm buying stock in Pfizer tonight.
Seriously.
Speaking of a guy who owns no stock in Pfizer.
Yeah.
Hot on the heels of his statement. Or statements about purchasing Twitter, a deal which still has not gone through, and stating that once he acquired Twitter, he would eliminate the lifelong ban on former President Donald Trump. Elon Musk has apparently stated he's now Republican.
Who's surprised by this?
The interesting thing about this is he has always been one of these very vocal libertarians. Mm. I feel like there are a lot of libertarians that are just hippie ass conservatives, like pot smoking conservatives. You know, like like the more and more libertarians that I meet that are all about freedom and, you know, nobody gets to tell us what to do. They sound like the new Republicans.
Isn't that like the Tea Party? Isn't that what they were called before?
Yeah.
Listen, I was surprised when I found out that he said this, because I would have thought he already was, given the blatant tax situation that goes along with being that rich and, you know, the breaks that are always giving out. It seems to be a Republican thing. So you see a lot of times that people are controlled by their wallets in this situation. So I would have thought he already is a Republican.
Right.
But to see him, I mean, who gives a shit who he's going to vote for? You know what I mean? Other than the fact that, like, he needs to. Here's the other thing with Elon Musk is, I don't know if you've noticed this with him going Republican. He's always putting out a bunch of tweets as well, thinking that people are going to start coming after him as well. You know, I don't know if you saw the one recently where he thought, oh, if something happens to me, blame it on the Russians.
Right.
You know, and now he's going to, now with the Republican thing, he's like, oh, something happens to me, blame it on the Democrats. Like, guy, are you buying Twitter? Are you making it a free for all? What are you doing? Or are you just trying to be relevant in the news right now?
I'm going to make a hot prediction right now, that Twitter deal never goes through. I think
more like it's not going to.
He has personally sabotaged the deal multiple times by discussing things publicly that are in the NDA on the Twitter acquisition. And then he comes forward and says Twitter lawyers have informed him that he's violated the NDA. He's trying to get out of this deal. I think he realizes it's a bad deal. But all that aside, the whole like conservatives in disguise as libertarian thing, it reminds me a lot of former WWE wrestler Val Venus, aka Sean Morley. I used to have countless debates with this guy, because he was so extreme with his political ideology. Mm-hmm. And I said, dude, you sound like a Nazi version of a conservative.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, no, I'm a libertarian and I'm proud. Yeah. And he's another guy that got banned off Twitter for life.
Oh, did he?
You know,
that just sounds like today's new version of being in the closet is these hardcore Republicans who recognize that it's not the greatest look in today's climate. So I'm going to disguise myself not quite as a Republican, but I'll use libertarian or centrist or whatever other term might not get me as much heat when really they have, because there's people out there who have like outward blatant disregard for a lot of other different communities. And then there are those who have it, but they keep it kind of on the low and don't want to necessarily be associated with those who are out. And that's all I think the difference is. I think some are out with it and some are not.
I wasn't going to touch on this story, but since I just mentioned former WWE wrestler Val Venis, I'll throw this out there for your consumption. This past Monday night, WWE wrestlers and tag team champions Sasha Banks and Naomi showed up to Monday Night Raw this week, and they were scheduled to defend their tag team titles in the main event of the show. When they were told the creative for the match, they walked in to the vice president's office, put their title belts on the desk, and went home. They have been suspended. There are countless wrestlers within the company that are frustrated with them, with their attitude, making no excuses, no apologies. Of course, wrestlers that work for the rival company are all saying, yeah, don't treat them like that. Come work for us. And fans are very much on the side of the pro wrestlers thinking, oh, they're getting abused by the company. I have my thoughts on this. Tid, as a professional wrestler for 25 years, what's your thought on this? This is not the first time Sasha Banks has pulled this stunt either. It's like three summers in a row she gets the summer off for suspension.
My initial thought to this is if they're still under contract, then this whole thing is screaming a long storyline. I think with the way that, you know, who knows? You know, the WWE has done crazier things, right? With the way that the climate of everybody like, oh, WWE wrestlers are treated like shit, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, then go get work someplace else. But that makes for a really interesting story if you can creatively make it so that these two wrestlers are being treated and mistreated and then come back and start their own little faction, whatever the case may be. Who knows? We're going to have to wait and see how this plays out. I think the problem is most people try to write what's already been written. And by that, I mean, they try to guess, you know what I mean, the way that this is going to go. And you know as well as I do, all of that could change within minutes before they even go to air.
Sorry, Dan, I'll get to you in a sec. I have it on really good authority. It's not a storyline. It could eventually be turned into one, as has happened 100%. Many times in the WWE.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Where backstage politics turn into something. Mm-hmm. At this point, the company is furious. Apparently, the two women both want to be released and free to go where they want to go. Sasha Banks has publicly said that she asked for her release many times and was not granted it. At this point, I think they're better off to send them home and sit there and receive their downside guarantee to not work. Or I don't even know if they get paid if they're suspended. That's a whole other issue. But Dan, look at it this way. You're an actor. You show up on set for a movie and you're a supporting character and you go, these lines don't work for me. You can change it or I'm going home. Like,
yeah, but I think it's a different situation, a different context, which is why I was going to ask the question if either of those WWE superstars had made any comment or if there's anything out there about what the direction of creative was for the evening that made them walk out like that. Because my thinking is that it had to be something seriously against what they believe is right. But we're speculating at this point.
Apparently, the creative that was out there was they were going to lose the match. Sasha was going to betray Naomi and they were going to split up and it was going to set up a program between the two of them, rocketing Sasha back to the main event picture in the women's division.
Yeah, see that
they have apparently stated they felt this is wrong as being black women's champions, that they are being done wrong. The WWE for years and years and years was known as having a problem when it came to equity. Over the last 3, 4, 5 years, they've had more black champions than any other race, whether it's the world champion, or anything underneath.
I am not going to attempt to speak on their behalf because I don't know them and I don't know the full story. But what I will say is that you have to look at a bigger picture, man. And I sometimes feel like I'm always fending for people of color by trying to explain that it's more than what you see on the surface. It's one thing to show, hey, there's more black champions than there's ever been. We put people of color at the top of our card, etc. It also has to do with the storylines that come across and how they feel about it personally. And I'll answer your question about the actor thing by using this part of my answer to explain what I think is going on with them. Perhaps they had an issue with turning on each other. The idea that black people can't get along or have to fight or the stereotype of it. Now, again, I'm not going to try to speak for them. I'm just throwing something out there that maybe that could be part of it. So it's not about being a champ or running with the storyline. It's like this black versus black thing isn't something that we're feeling to do at this time. And there's a moral thing that there's an issue with. To answer your question, I was in an acting class. Shout out to our guest later, because that's how I met her. And it might have been in that acting class, and I might ask her about this, because it wasn't her who said it. But I had another member of the class mention that they showed up on set once, and they were asked to do something by the director that was not originally scripted. And it had to do with like this pretend getting peed on scene. So of course it wasn't real pee or anything like that, but it was like,
what's this the fucking point?
Yeah, the point for her was, I'm not comfortable. I wouldn't have signed up for this had I known. So yeah, I do think that there's scenarios. I haven't been in one, Don, but do I understand actors who still come to set knowing, listen, I'm playing a character, it's not me, I'm playing whoever I'm playing, but there are scenarios I don't feel comfortable with. It could have to be with a situation, a certain actor. It could be intimate based. It could be something that goes against their moral beliefs. Whatever it is, I get that there's certain things you won't do for money, status, or to move up in a company. And I think they deserve the opportunity to express themselves to say what that is. Because it can't just be, hey, be happy, you're at the top of the card. There's so much more to it than that. And people of color do have this issue with ways in which they're portrayed. I understand that. And I believe in standing up for yourself if you don't like how you're being portrayed.
Let's also not forget, gentlemen, the extra caveat to this entire thing is the fact that we're dealing with two women here. So we'll never know what the fuck they're thinking because they're women and we just cannot figure it out. So until they come forward and tell us, we're never going to know. We're just going to keep on speculating.
You reminded me of the new trailer that dropped this week for Marvel's new TV show that's coming out in a few months, She-Hulk. And that show looks fucking great. And there's a line in the show where Bruce Banner as the Hulk is talking to his cousin Jennifer, who becomes She-Hulk, and he says he's trying to teach her how to become She-Hulk. And he's like, look, what triggers your transformation is anger and fear. And her response is, that's every woman's like state at all times. I'm looking forward
to it. Do you really think that looks good?
Yeah, I think it looks great.
Really?
Yeah, She-Hulk is going to be like hypersexualized because that's how she was in the comics. And it's the first time ever that a Marvel property has had a character that was open about their sexuality. I think it's going to be interesting. I may not be letting my 10-year-old watch it, but I'm just saying.
I mean, that's not true. Deadpool's very open about his sexuality.
Well, he's not in the MCU yet, but yes, you're right. He gets his fuck on.
Yeah. And apparently so does Aquaman with fish.
With fish. There's a couple other quick stories I want to touch on before we switch gears entirely. This one, guys, I want to say is really, really good news. This hits me personally because of people I know that have been affected. Researchers have found a link between five different types of bacteria common in urine and tissue samples from men with aggressive prostate cancer. The fact that they found this commonality with these five specific types of bacteria with men that have aggressive prostate cancer has led these researchers to believe this is the pathway to finding really effective treatment and a cure for prostate cancer.
It's not going to stop the doctor from sticking his finger in your bum, though, is it?
Thank God, no.
Okay, good.
That's a highlight. but
Donnie book appointments monthly. Yeah.
Are you not my doctor?
Because they can't let them in every Friday. Get suspicious.
Yeah.
I personally know people that we've lost because of prostate cancer. And I know another person who had a very long, arduous battle with prostate cancer and still here, thank goodness. If they can get any closer to treating it, eliminating it, I say that's a good news story for today. Mm-hmm. And then there's researchers in Baltimore at Johns Hopkins University, students who have created not quite as impactful an invention, but still really significant. And Tid, you're going to love this one because don't you hate, I know Tid, how much you love tacos. I know how you love burritos. Yeah. Don't you hate when those tacos, like if you have a big soft taco and it spills all over you, isn't that the fucking worst? Okay. You're a taco pro, but yeah. It is a common problem with people.
Yeah. White people.
Students at Johns Hopkins University have invented edible tape that will keep your fucking food shut. Edible tape.
What's the difference between edible underwear?
It's a food grade fibrous material with an organic adhesive with enough tensile strength to hold together a big fat burrito.
It's a fruit roll up.
It's not a fruit roll up, but I don't think fruit roll ups have the adhesive quality you need for that. But regardless, pretty fucking cool. We're solving cancer and taco problems in the same week.
Taco tape. Jesus Murphy. Like there's way bigger things going on in the world that we need to figure out. You know what you know what the easiest thing to do is? What's put an mean? Extra fucking tortilla down and eat over the top of that, and then you just create another taco.
Yeah, they can have a second sandwich.
Create some kind of like chemical induced stupid ass tape to hold a taco together. You don't deserve to eat a taco if you don't know how to eat a taco without making a goddamn mess.
You're not a fan of taco tape?
No. No.
Tid, you alluded to the fact that there's bigger stories going on in the world, and obviously there are.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on in the last little while recently that we have not had an opportunity to touch on, either because it happened since our last episode or just before our last episode. There is the shooter, David Cho, who was targeting Taiwanese church parishioners. Mm-hmm. There's the 16 people that were shot in Milwaukee after the Milwaukee Bucks NBA playoff game. There's the 6 people who were recently killed, 12 others that were wounded in a shooting in downtown Sacramento. And of course, there's the big one that everyone has been talking about. It's been one of the featured stories on every newscast since it happened. And that's the big shooting that occurred in Buffalo. Absolutely heinous. 18-year-old traveled from hours away in, I believe, northern state New York, upstate New York, traveled to Buffalo, specifically into a predominantly black neighborhood, and opened fire.
Let's listen. Let's call it what it is, Donnie. This racist piece of shit,
yep.
by his own admission,
yep.
by his own admission,
yep.
went to an area, walked into a store where he knew he targeted individuals, not based on their name or that he knew them. He targeted these individuals based solely on the color of their skin.
Correct.
Let's not try to let people say that he's got a mental problem. He's a fucking racist and a piece of shit who deserves to be taken out behind the barn and done like old Yeller. That's the end of it for me. Fuck him. Dan?
Yeah, as you guys very well know, I have 1,000 things to say about this, and we clearly don't have time for it. You know, you guys, I'm finding it hard to come up with words to really express how I feel about situations like this because I've used them all already. Disgusted, mortified. It just, the list goes on and on. And the sad thing is I have zero faith, like zero, that there's going to be a change, that we will stop racism or targeted acts of terrorism, which this is, based on racism. There's so many angles I want to take about how I feel about this. One involves the right-wing media, who, it doesn't matter how obvious it is, they can't just come out and say, this was clearly racism. This was hatred through and through. Mm-hmm. They have to find some other way to trivialize it, justify it in a way that's like, we're all Jussie Smollett's. We're all making racism up. To them, it's mental illness, you know, which suggests that, of course, he's not of sound mind. He can't know the difference between right and wrong. Forget the fact that he wrote a 180-page manifesto. Forget the fact that he targeted a white man and then said sorry after he realized he was white. Forget the fact that he wrote the N-word on his gun. Forget the fact that he himself said it. He was there to kill black people. The right-wing media can't just come out and condemn racism, admitting that it's clear in its existence and its continued wreaking of terror on black people and other people of color in this country, not in this country, in the world. That sickens me beyond words that can explain, because it provides the seeds for more racism to grow. It suggests that you can do it, get away with it without being called a racist or considered a racist. And we get to continue to say the things that we say and push the narratives that we want without being called racist either. And you have to think about this. The motherfucker's 18. I'm not great at math, but that puts him around somewhere 2004 in terms of when he was born. We're talking about someone who wasn't even here for 9/11. Where does this hate come from? It's generational. It is taught. The hate continues to flow down. And we're talking about the year 2022, when things like this happened 100 years ago. There's massacres that we could talk about from 100 years ago where black people were targeted. And in those 100 years that have passed, continued targets of hatred and racism continue to take people's lives away. And they, of course, don't just murder people, but they destroy the lives of the friends and families around them. The amount of black pain is never enough for these people to put away their hate or to admit that the hate exists. And of course, I could go on and on, but I'm mortified, disgusted, and pained at the loss of life. But continued pain exists in my heart for the knowledge that this is just going to continue, because they are teaching it to their children, and their children will teach it to their children, and they will always have a strong part of their society that has news outlets like Fox that will go, this isn't racism. The thing that's the problem, we're going to pretend doesn't exist so that it never goes away. And it won't go away, because they continue to push this bullshit that it couldn't possibly be racism, that white people don't have a history of massacring people who aren't white simply because they're not white. That's not true. It's you continuing to think that it exists and saying that it exists is the problem. We're going to talk about replacement theory, but we don't want to talk about critical race theory. As long as it suits our narrative, we'll stick to it. And I haven't even begun to talk about the gun problem, which we discussed off air, which, of course, anyone who knows me knows how big a problem I have with guns and the gun laws in the States. We have an 18-year-old who purchased this legally, but he can't buy alcohol. Somebody make that make sense to me. It doesn't. It never will. And it's never going to.
That no time should, at no time, and no time should anybody, any son, sit there and watch his father get murdered, especially at their job that they're just trying to get by their day to day. And this is something that happened. You know what I mean? This is a sad, 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 and disgusting, heinous event that happened. And it's never going to stop, Dan. To your point, it's never going to stop until we can address and get rid of the bigger picture of this thing. If this guy was forced to go into this store with his bare fucking hands and try to fight these people, this wouldn't happen. He was given a means to make it happen fast and painfully, and that was a firearm.
Correct.
And that is something that needs to be addressed. Now, With that said, before we go, I just have to say, I want to do a quick shout out to a black man who is trying to do his damnedest, no matter how old he gets, to repopulate the black race. And I'm talking about none other than Flava Flav. At 63 years old, this man is having kids. He is a genuine, and I don't mean this as any kind of joke whatsoever to the situation, as much as Donnie is laughing. I love Flava Flav, and I love the fact that he understands that more black men need to be given a life in this fucking world. And he's not going to stop, and I love him for it.
There's no easy way to transition out of a heavy topic like that, but it's something that we wanted to put attention to. We wanted to put eyes on it. And Ted, I'm appreciative of you giving me a chuckle before I go ahead and introduce this week's guest, because you know, we got to bring the energy back up. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want to participate in our conversation with this week's guest, you can text us right now or get us on WhatsApp 437-375-2000. It is time now for the big hello. And this week's featured guest is a comic whose preferred pronouns are she, they, and he. So totally non-binary and totally going to make me fuck up this intro at some point. He was born in Montreal, but calls Toronto home. Trained by Second City, she has been featured in Just for Laughs, the Toronto Fringe
Festival, you can just stick with she,
and Montreal Sketchfest, Garden City Festival, Toronto She Dot Festival, Leo Fest, and so many more. They also produce the super successful Asian Comedy All-Stars, Muju, a Muslim and Jewish showcase, Gaysian Comedy All-Stars, the world's first all-queer, all-Asian comedy showcase, Comedy Mixtape, Toronto's longest-running musical comedy show, and since 2012, she's run the Open Mic Laughter Luau in Toronto and many more events. The names of some of those events may have tipped you off that our guest this week is proudly queer as fuck. They also produce and host the political comedy podcast Almost Indians. You can catch all of her right now on Out for Laughs, which is on Out TV, available on Amazon. Her comedy album, About Time, is also available for purchase on Howl and Roar Records, which, of course, is run by our good friend of the show, Allison Dore. I wanted to do a little freestyle rap for her, but I can't think of anything that rhymes with her fucking last name. All of our godchildren out there, please give a warm welcome to Rush. No, it's not short for anything, you racist fuck. Kazzy.
Hello, thank you. You didn't have to start with the pronoun thing. It's about like what I look like at the time. So if I'm presenting as she, I'm not wearing a beard right now, so he doesn't really work. Do you got what I'm saying?
Listen, I have become extremely aware of everyone's preferred pronouns, and I respect them. So when I see that publicly you list all of them, I'm gonna give you all of them.
It's more like she, they, he, I don't care. But if you start cycling through it, all you're doing is giving fuel to like right-wing Twitter to come after
you. Oh,
me.
No.
They love doing that. That's like their favorite pastime, which fair does enough. Help my algorithms though. Like I am boosted because of that.
For sure.
Yeah. So we're how are you, Donnie? This is my first time meeting you.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Thanks good. For hanging out with us tonight.
What's yeah. good, Rush?
Hi, Danio. This is like, I came into like a really harsh topic there. I was like, "Ooh, I might have to."
We had to pivot quickly for you.
Yeah, I heard I was gonna guess Flava Flav, so I'm glad that my guesstimation was correct, Chris.
Who else could it be? Who else was it gonna be at that age? You know what I mean? That virile of a human being, right?
And Nick Cannon is trying. I don't know if you've noticed, but Nick Cannon is pumping out like children every week.
Yeah. Bro, if Nick Cannon's still pumping out kids at 63, though,
looking at the trajectory, it's going to be more than like what Flava Flav has right now. Just numbers.
He's going to start his own Motown Review. I think that's Nick Cannon's. that's where he's going. Like he's going to eventually get rid of everybody on Wild and Out, and it's just going to be his kids that take over on this.
He's going to have enough for a whole NFL team and a practice basically squad.
A brand new and living color. That's what you're doing. If you're going to stick like one family in somewhere.
Right, living it. Canon. That's what's up. So listen, we're so glad that you hung out with us. You're hanging out with us this week. Dan sent us a message on our group chat and said, hey, I met this super cool person at acting class, and I'd like to bring her out on the show. So here you are. What the hell are you doing at acting class? I thought you told jokes for a living. What's the plan here?
I do, but like it's sort of like what Mitch Hedberg said. It's just like once you become a comedian and know enough anything, suddenly people want you to do things that aren't telling jokes, right? So it's like,
right.
You're a comedian, so please act. Or like, can you dance? And I'm like, no, but sure. Whatever pays the bills, really. I like comedy movies. And to be in them, you have to be able to act. So
how's that going?
Yeah. I am not in a comedy movie right now, if that's what the question was. I am not in something. I've been writing scripts. I've been talking with production companies. I don't want to say which company, but they're like a big deal when we're off the air, I can tell you. I think I've already bothered Danny. It's funny how like he was like, oh, I got to get this person on. But then I've been so annoying since then, just like generally as just a person. That I'm like, I think he regrets meeting me, but you know, that's why he's not saying anything.
This Dan, can happening. You confirm? Do you regret meeting Rush Kazi?
Not at all, man. Rush stood out in the class.
He gave the overseas delay on that one.
Yeah, he had to think about like it.
European correspondent delay all of a sudden.
You guys have been freezing. That was not an intentional delay if it came across that way, because I fully answered right away. And now I'm hearing some like
a internet. Modem sound?
What is that?
That's Dan's internet. Oh,
okay. Yeah, no, y'all.
Dial up.
Nah, I didn't mean to delay like that. Rush was a standout in the class because she's very like she puts her energy right out there. Some people are super chill and they kind of wait for their turn, but Rush is like, you know,
she comes through
with plenty of entertainment. And I actually wanted to ask you how much you felt that helped, because I felt it helped me. Like, as these boys know, I had to take some of these shows off because of the nights when we were doing our acting classes. And it had been a few years for me, and it has since helped me to, like, you know, get some work. And I just want to know, because I know when I met you, you're like, yeah, I'm not an actor, I'm a comic, but I'm taking acting classes to, like, push myself forward. How much has it helped you? How much have you learned that you feel is helping you move forward, all these new things you got going on?
Well, I mean, so originally when I was taking acting classes, I thought I was just going to focus on like comedic roles and commercials and stuff like that. But because of the classes, it made me go, hey, maybe drama is a possibility. So, I've learned how to cry on camera. Like, that has happened.
Do it.
As I was just saying, it takes a lot out of you. So I don't want to do it right now and then just be like recovering from that for the rest of like.
Yeah.
The show.
Do you have a specific place? Do you have one specific place that you try to go to, or is there a couple of different ones? You know what I mean? Depending on the emotion, you know, like how deep of a cry and a sob, do you, like, you know what I mean? Like, do you have this one place you're like, yep, this is going to get me to that spot? You know what
I mean? Don't really think of anything in particular. It's just like, I think Dan would know, like, we just sort of like sit in the script itself and then you kind of become the character, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't really know how to explain it, because it's not something that's like, it's not like pushing a button, right? And yeah, it's not something I ever thought I'd be ever able to do. So
I just cried on camera. Feel free to sign up for my acting classes.
It's true though. The way that Tid asked the question is very, it's appropriate in that you do have to go somewhere. And I think what a lot of people forget, and this is what helped me, Rush, and you can speak to it, is that you're not pretending, right? In order to go somewhere, you do have to get to a place of a particular emotion. I mean, I was in the studio today recording dialogue for something, and there were particular bits where the character is extremely angry. And as you know, Rush, from our classes, our acting coach asked us to allow ourselves to be angry, to be set. So you're not making it up. You're not trying. You're not pretending. You're not even necessarily thinking about something, but you know how those you've had those emotions. So allow yourself to feel those things. And to Rush's point, yeah, it does take a lot out of you, because you're not pretending to be angry. You're angry or sad or, you know what I mean? Like, so it's a big deal that you got there, Rush, because when meeting you, it seems to me like the steps you took from, I'm not even an actor, to, hey, I cried on camera, was pretty quick. That was pretty quick. What do you attest to?
Well, like at LB, I took several courses at the same time. I took the virtual course with you.
Yeah. Shout out to LB Acting Studio. We should shout them.
Louis Bomander is amazing. Jacob Kramer, amazing. Everyone else there, amazing, I assume. Oh, Daryl Fannin from LA is also my screenwriting instructor. He's also in LB. really good. I recommend them if you get the chance, Dan. But yeah, it was just because I was taking the two courses, the in-person one and the virtual one at the same time. And then I took another one afterwards. I think just the three courses is enough for me at this point. Maybe I should take an audition one just to know how to actually audition. But like, I feel like I know how to act at least a bit.
You learn more than you had before. And I want to
congratulate you on
everything that you got going on. Yeah.
Thanks.
We just had a text message that came in right now, 437-375-2000. It says, Rush, what's Dan like in acting class? Is he the leader of the crew or is he a total diva?
He is not a diva. He's not a leader. He is everyone. No, there's no leader in the class, right? There's no one person except for the instructor, right? Mm. And like it's hierarchical in that way.
So he's not a teacher's pet.
No, but no one, everyone's trying because they all paid like $500+ to be there, right? Like, yeah. So everyone wants to learn. No one's there being the cool kid smoking a cigarette in the back, except for maybe me, right?
Yeah, so,
Here's the bigger question. Does Dan constantly remind everybody in class about whatever anniversary to whatever song it is that he has out that week?
No, he's really good. You have to go on his Instagram.
I save that for the show. Yes.
Instagram and the show. I am the one who's been bragging in classes like an asshole, being like, oh, my album's coming out. Oh, my special's coming out. Guys, my album and my special coming out at the same time. Guys, have you seen the CBC article about me? Hey, did you know that the right-wing assholes are after me? That's pretty cool, too, right? That's me. That's never been Dan. Dan's a sweetheart.
The right-wing assholes are after all of us, so you're in good company.
I want to ask you about
that. I have a subreddit about me.
Rush, let's talk about that, because we talked about it off-air, and also, as you already know, during the show, one of my many gripes is that right-wing conservatives and people with that ideology think, I don't know how else to say it, very disrespectfully about people who aren't like them, people of color, people in the LGBTQ community. I mean, it never ends with their problems with people who aren't like them. And your comedy and you yourself have been essentially victim to their thinking. Can you speak on that and how you have responded to it? Because that's been part of the conversations we've had off air.
So when like it, here's the thing, it's like so easy to be like, don't look at the comments, right? Like that's the advice I give to people. If you go on YouTube, don't look at your comments, don't look anywhere. Because comments, most are going to be good, but there's always going to be one asshole with like a fake dummy account that's like trying to troll you. It's just, I'd noticed while I remember I was talking to Dan, like I was just noticing my YouTube suddenly got flooded and was really weird. Like I just had people who would have found me are finding me and being really rude on there. And then that someone like pointed out that I had a subreddit about me. And my own like feed on right wing Twitter, and it was all happening because my album and my special came out, and because CBC released the article, which was a great article, but then like they tweeted something that was just more like SEO directed, like non-binary, polyamorous, Muslim, queer, all the stuff, like just like, and pansexual as well, like so just a bunch of words that will trigger certain responses. And what's interesting is the right wing hates everything that I am, but there's different factions of different people who hate, and so they all got to get together over this very lovely act of hating on me. That's nice. Which I'm really not, like, you know, I'm like a weird Captain Planet for like people who hate me, right? So it's just like I got them together, so that's kind of sweet. And also the algorithms then pumped me up to like better places, which helped me out. There was only one day where it was like a little bit of a bummer. I was showcasing for Just for Laughs. Because I've been in Just for Laughs Toronto, but not like the main one in Montreal, right? And so they specifically wanted me to come and like do a set for them. But like that was the exact same day where I saw all these comments. So the set that I was going to do, I threw it out the window and it became all about just making fun of them. Right. So that's, you know, cathartic and fun. It's just, it was something I wrote just 2 hours before I performed. So probably not the most polished piece to show a TV executive, but you know, so I don't know. Like it's like the reactions are, I just do what I have always been doing, which is make fun of them. And then make fun of myself more because like it's way more fun to make fun of yourself. You know yourself better than these guys, right? So
good for you.
Plus, it's the 8 mile approach, right? Insult yourself, and they got nothing left.
They got nothing. Mm-hmm. All they're doing is repeating like the same things I said, but worse. Like,
you like girls,
right?
Ooh, really?
Yeah, they're not known for being creative.
They're not. And it's just like, it's funny to see like someone's like, you're trying to figure out what they hate about you. It's like, are they Islamophobic? Are they racist? Are they homophobic? Are they all of it? You know, they just pick and choose sometimes. Mm-hmm. Then there's also like the homophobic brown people who are like, there's no way that person is brown. That's a white girl with a spray tan is my favorite one.
Wow.
One of my other favorite tweets was, hey guys, I bit the bullet and listened to some of her comedy. It ain't bad. It ain't bad.
Why would they assume spray tan? Like, they just assume that you're too lazy to go get a real tan? Like, why would they, like, are they spray tan? Do they know how much spray tans cost nowadays?
I was about to ask. It's like, how did they think I have $150? You know? I mean, thank you, I guess.
We had a text message just come in on WhatsApp, 437-375-2000. It says, hi, Rush. I'm a queer woman in Toronto. I'm curious about the queer comedy festivals Donnie mentioned in the intro. Do you think these events are made to make the queer audience feel safe and welcomed, or are queer comedians discriminated against and need their own platform because it's harder for them to get shows?
So I would say that it started off as the latter, but now it's the former, right? Mm. Like, there was, like, when I started comedy like 10 years ago, there weren't many queer shows, if any. There was like one open mic run by like a lesbian downtown, and it was pretty decently attended. And then like things started blowing up. Like, I run queer shows. I like, all of my shows inherently become a queer show because I'm on it, and because I try to book at least 50% queer people. They're very diverse. Even like Asian Comedy All-Stars, for example, is like supposed to be an Asian show, but it's pan-Asia. So we have a Palestinian act, we have like Iranian acts, we have Indian, Chinese, Vietnamese, Korean. Like, we're hitting all different parts of Asia. Also parts of Asia that North Americans don't think of as Asia, right? But like, again, showing like the diaspora and showing how many queer people are out there. So like, a lot of the work that we've created is because they are safe for the audience who also are represented in our lineups. But it did start off as a thing to like give ourselves platforms, because it was like, I would be the one diversity hire kind of thing, you know, in like a show of just straight cis white dudes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of shows are still like that. A lot of shows are still cis and white and straight. Mm-hmm. So having these festivals come out is beneficial and helpful. And the more the merrier, really. So I don't really
know. How do you validate if the comic is queer?
What do you mean? There's no test for it. Like, if you say,
well, what if they just like can't get booked and like, yeah, I'm queer. Put me on the
show. Well, I mean, are they a good comedian? There shouldn't be any other reason why they're like, I'm not gonna put like a bad queer comedian on, no offense. But like, so if this queer comedian is getting on, they're probably already good enough to be on a regular show. It's just now I'm putting a bunch of queer voices together. And
I would think that you probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, you probably have more fun doing the queer shows as opposed to doing those straight crowds, because you know, obviously you have to work in both at some point, because I think you have a lot more liberties, you know what I mean, with people that actually understand fucking comedy, mm-hmm. as opposed to a lot of the straight crowds. Is that fair or what?
I mean, both crowds are fun. It's just with a cis straight crowd, you're going to spend a bit of time explaining a bunch of stuff if you're doing queer jokes.
Right.
That being said, my jokes are not all just queer, you know, like I can make, like, I have jokes about various different topics. It's like in a queer show with a queer audience doing queer material. Wow. I'm saying queer a lot, but like, there's less explaining. You can just be like, I'm non-binary, and you know, you don't have to be like, a non-binary is this, this is the definition of non-binary.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Are they easier to take along for the ride is what I mean. You know what I mean? Like with your material as opposed to trying to, okay, stick with me here, people, like, this, you know what I mean?
Well, like, I mean, it really does depend on the audience. Like, if it's a straight audience who's willing to, like, listen to your explanation of what, like, a certain word is, and they're, like, they're willing to come along for the ride, then you're just spending a bit of time explaining certain things and premises. Right. Whereas if the audience is, like a homophobic audience, which hasn't really happened to me yet, except online, then they're not going to want you to like you regardless, right? So it doesn't really matter.
A couple weeks ago, we had a friend of the show, stand-up comic Jeff Leeson, on the program, and I think Jeff is fucking hysterical. We talked a lot about comedy is really getting sanitized, right, in 2022, in terms of there seems to be a harder limit on what people can and cannot make jokes about. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you have noticed, like, if there are separations of audience, do you think that it makes the comedy less dangerous? Because you are literally speaking to that crowd about what they know and what they're comfortable with.
Well, I mean, I don't know if the word sanitize is the correct word to use. Like, I know, okay. Jeff, but like, it's always like, was it more of a complaint? Was it one of those, oh, you can't say what you want anymore kind of comments? Like, I wasn't here for the episode, so I don't know what was
there
said.
There was a lot of that. And there was a lot of conversation about comics that get, you know, the online hate because their jokes went too far or whatever else. Right. And some do. And there's also the school of thought that comedy should be a safe place to say what you need to say, as long as it's not hate, as long as it's not hate speech.
Yeah, I think especially after Will Smith slapping Chris Rock, there's been a lot of talk of like just how safe are comedians or how comfortable are comedians to this, you know, say
the Will Smith thing did not trigger. Like, the Will Smith thing did not trigger a wave of other people trying to attack comedians. People wanting to attack comedians have
happened. Dave Chappelle's been attacked. Yeah.
Yeah, but that guy, listen, you saw he had like a knife inside of a fake replica gun, and the guy was mentally ill and bought like tickets way ahead, way before the Oscars. Mm-hmm. Like, that person had this plan ahead of time. This isn't because this isn't because Will Smith slapped Chris Rock.
But there was a wave of support online for the people that said Chris Rock went too far. You don't talk about his wife's alopecia, and that's off limits.
That really isn't a place for me to speak, honestly, even though I'm a comedian, because that's more of a Black woman creator voice that I just ceded to, and I'm like, this is not my world. So I can't. It's not the comedy world anymore. These are two millionaires slapping each other. One being slapped, one not being slapped. I am not in this world or realm. I'm not being affected in any way. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of comedians were like, Chris Rock. And I'm just like, really, honestly, we're not at the same level. Let's be completely clear about that, right?
Just to be safe, though, do you know Krav Maga?
I know Krav Maga?
Jiu-jitsu or some kind of self-defense stuff.
I got some figure skating.
Up on stage. Oh, okay.
I got some figure skating background.
Okay.
I mean, the shoes are basically blades, right? I can just kick someone with a knife shoe if I wanted to.
Knife shoes. Awesome.
Yeah, but then you got to wear skates up on stage when you're doing your act, just in case.
You know what? That could give me another thing that people can hate about me. You know, like that. The stupid hipster lesbian cunt with the skates. Like, that's
and the strong ankles. She clearly has strong as fuck ankles.
Because
she's standing up there for hours.
Just spraining my ankle constantly. I wanted to go back to the sanitized statement.
Sure, yeah,
I don't think comedy is sanitized. If anything, you can say whatever the hell you want. The thing is, the audience has also learned they can react however they want. And I don't mean violently. I mean just, you know, not attending these shows, deciding to boo, leaving, asking for their money back. These are things that people want to do. Comedy is not free speech, because unless you're on the sidewalks, you can scream whatever the hell you want. But if like producers are paying you, right, and asking you for certain types of material because they're technically contracting you to do that, and you don't give them that, they have the right to not hire you again. There's no guarantee that you're going to get booked again if the audience doesn't find you funny. And if the audience doesn't find you funny because they're offended by what you said, that doesn't make you a better comedian than anyone else. Like, most of the time when people are like, you can't say anything anymore, it's a guy at an open mic who literally just says whatever he wants right after anyway. So it's
really
means nothing.
I guess where I'm coming from with that is, you know, and I always sort of lean back on the line that George Strombolopoulos has said many, many times, which is comedy should be fucking dangerous. And I kind of agree with that. And I look back at some of my favorite stand-ups through history, and I think those were people that weren't afraid to piss off or ruffle feathers. You know, Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy, you know, the comics that would really piss people off, ruffle feathers, and most
but
of their
But are they
act,
funny? They are.
They
right?
were, but today, well, if you took an Eddie Murphy comedy special today, you can't put it on TV.
Sure you can. I watch it on TV.
You can't.
I'm watching Delirious on TV. It's not like I'm watching it like, you know,
half of it would be considered homophobic.
Chappelle's doing transphobic and homophobic stuff still. He's still on TV. I don't know what the issue is. The people who complain about cancellation are referencing comedians who are not canceled. In fact, they're making more money. Mm-hmm. So I don't see this as an issue. It's a very not like the issue that they're making is more of like publicity, complaining that you can't say something. Because the thing is, you can say whatever the hell you want. And like, it's fake danger, right? It's like, oh, I'm going to get canceled for this. And then you sell another special to Netflix.
Right.
And I think it's very selective. The comics that these people are going after too. You know what I mean? Like there's still a pretty safe space to go after Eddie Murphy because he doesn't give a fuck. It's not going to affect his bottom line. Or to go after Chappelle, it's not going to affect
him. Well, Chappelle's always targeted, right?
But nobody's going after, you know, Anthony Jeselnik, and he says some pretty fucking controversial stuff. There's no doubt about it. Nobody's going after Ari Shaffir and that guy. I mean, he was the amazing racist, had all of those skits out, and he's still just as ridiculous with the stuff that he does now. You know what I mean? So, like, what has Ari done recently? He's got a new special coming out, actually, that they're taping right now. Yeah.
Okay.
Called Jew.
Well, he's Jewish.
Right, but like
a little on the nose, but whatever.
Anthony Jeselnik, honestly, he is actually such a sweet person in real life.
Fantastic! I know this is what I'm saying. And you look at him, chiseled, beautiful, like good look, and you're just like, what? And I think he's hilarious. He's one of my favorite comics of all time. Anthony,
the thing is, all of these comedians who are like are gonna go online and say that they're being canceled and be really angry are probably some of the nicest people you'll ever meet. And so it's kind of like, okay, so this is an act, and that's fine, sure. And this act is working. And if you scream that you're being canceled enough, more people will rally behind you and buy more tickets and come see you.
For sure.
So
do you think cancel culture is largely a right wing excuse that people sit on?
Yeah, and it's also not just a right-wing excuse, it's a left-wing excuse. It's an excuse for either side just to like get people to click on their little articles,
right,
and generate some money and buzz, and like every click gets you a dollar. Like, come on, these guys are fucking loaded, sitting on piles of money, just trying to get people to fight about culture wars that don't really exist. Mm. I mean, that's my opinion, and oh my God, I might get canceled because of it, but I really hope I get canceled because of it, because then I'll get a bunch of money. Right.
I read in your when I was preparing for this that you've done some musical comedy as well. I went to a musical comedy show 2 weeks ago. I saw a friend of the show, Rod Fernandez Stoll, with Fog and Lasers.
Oh, I like Rod Fernandez Stoll.
Down on Queen Street. I went to his show. That is a different fucking experience. Like, it's a loud concert where every joke is dick and fart and venom and blade, and that's about everything. And so I'm curious, is this what your musical comedy resembles? Is it anything like that?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it's a lot of Disney spoofs, right?
I love that.
Like, instead of the actual Disney song lyrics, it's about being ghosted or like just being just a giant shit. I mean, that's my comedy anyway, if you ever really listen to it. Like, my brand is me being just a giant shit. I just also happen to be these other things. But really, the consistent theme is I'm a giant shit. Like, the first album's called About Time. The second one's going to be called Fuckboy, because I'm a giant fuckboy. And we should all know this. And like, so all my musical comedy is really fuckboy themed. But like, think like Weird Al, or like Flight of the Conchords, you know.
Beautiful.
Different, but you know, like all the genres are very different. I will do whatever spoof, but like just a constant running thread is I'm a giant slut / fuckboy. Like, it's just, that's basically it, because that's all I really know.
I would be so gay for Flight of the Conchords. Like,
what do you mean would? They still exist. They're not gone. You can be gay.
They're not
right
in
now.
Front of me, right?
And you're still gay, Donnie.
Yeah. You see, like, that doesn't change the gayness.
I'm the biggest fanboy of Jermaine and Brett. I think they're so good. Fucking comedy geniuses.
Yeah,
they are.
I remember back in whatever it was, 07 or 08, when I first discovered them, and Dan and I started binging all their shows. And Dan is such a critic when it comes to music. And he would listen to their shit and be like, it's actually good music.
Okay. Oh, they're amazing. They're amazing.
Being hilarious.
Yeah, and lyrically too, because like I'm a big fan of like lyric structure and patterns and rhyming and stuff and delivery and all that kind of stuff that goes into songwriting. Right. And they're hilarious. Like, and they just they knock it out of park with every track. Yeah, so I'd be very curious to hear what you come up with, Russian. Would love to even work with you on some stuff.
Oh, please make my shit better. I'm not a hip hop eponymous.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's Canada's answer to Flight of the Conchords, which is John Lajoie.
Yeah.
Also, I loved him so much. Like, Show Me Your Genitals is one of my favorite songs ever.
Yeah, he's
I don't even mean comedy song, just generally, like, one of my favorite songs ever. And Lonely Island is really good, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lonely Island's great.
Flo and Joan, I don't know if you know them. They're the British sisters, but they, like, lived here for a while. So, like, I got to know them personally.
Okay.
I do not.
A weird flex on my end. But there's a song called We Gotta Save the Bees, like, which, you know, good song.
I feel like, and this comes to mind as we start to wrap up tonight, John Lajoie, I mentioned him, and then it popped in my head. The last time I saw John Lajoie was on Amazon, which you're also on Amazon. And John Lajoie is on that show, LOL Canada, Last One Laughing. And he did a bit where he was trying to get the other Canadian comedy legends to laugh, where he just took a guitar and started freestyling a song on the spot. And it was so fucking gold. I'm like, I would have lasted 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling, Rush, just from what I've seen of you today, our first time meeting, you would last about 6 seconds on Last Time Laughing.
I don't know. I thought about it because my friend Brandon's on there, right? And So I was thinking about, like,
he was a rock, man.
Oh, he's like, honestly, generally one of the funniest goddamn people I know. And he's a beautiful singer and he can do the splits. And like, he'll randomly just start booty shaking. We were in the same sketch troupe for the longest time. Members of a sketch troupe are now in, like, Tall Boys on CBC Gem and Abroad. Sorry, my dog is really distracting and licking the crap out of my hand. But I thought about it. I'm like, I can go without laughing. But if I'm having a good time,
yeah,
I like being free with my laughter, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I grew up really sarcastic and bitchy, and I have resting bitch face if I'm not constantly laughing. So I didn't want you guys to be like, why did we bring this bitch on? Oh, worst. She hated being here. We hated her being here. Never have her again.
That's exactly what we say about Tid. Why did we bring this resting bitch face?
I was going to say that about myself.
So I often ask this, and I need to know from yourself.
Okay.
Obviously, there was a moment in time that made you decide, I'm going to, you know, become a comic. I want to try comedy at my hand and stuff like that. But who is on your Rushmore? Mm. Who's your four on your Rushmore that you're like, man, these are the four that made me really, you know, want to be a comic?
Okay, so this is hard to answer because, like, my four ended up being four brown Canadian comedians because it was just to prove to my parents that I was allowed
to do. Nothing wrong with that.
That's really
cool. But I mean, but that's also not, they're not the, like, you know, like, I was really into Dave Chappelle growing up and like Eddie Murphy. You guys were just mentioning comedians that I love being like, oh, they're like, they're not allowed to be on TV. I'm like, but that's where I saw them, right? Mm. So it was just really hard to, they all end up being male comedians. Like, I made time for, like, Amy Schumer. Because at one point people just said I sounded like her. And I'm like, that's interesting. This is before I did comedy. But the comedians that I really got into were Russell Peters. And, like, I know it's considered hack now, but Russell Peters was on there. Sean Majumdar, even though he's, like, half brown, he's half Newfie. It's, like, a whole thing. Sorry, my dog's doing weird-ass shit over there. There's Ali Badshah, who I'm actually friends with now. So it's always weird when someone that you thought was, like, your hero that you saw on TV, you're now just buddies with. He's going to be on my show next week on Asian Comedy All-Stars.
Cool.
Sugar Sammy, if we're doing four. Oh. So these are all, like, local-ish, brown comedians. And it was just, like, me being 15 years old telling my parents, I kind of want to do what they're doing. And then being like, no, you have to be a doctor or a lawyer, an engineer, or accountant. These are your four options. But I'm like, what about those guys? And they're like, well, they have penises. So the rules do not apply to that. So then I grew one. And there we go. I did not grow one. I just have them in my drawer. But you know what I mean.
Like a chia pet one? Like, oh.
Yeah. It's like, it was just a nub. And it's just
cute. Penis. Yeah. I feel like that's always a tough question, the Mount Rushmore of comedy, because I feel like mine changes from week to week, you know?
When you said Mount Rushmore, I thought you were making a pun on my name. I'm now just realizing it's a presidential thing and there's four. I was like, oh, what does Rush want more of? Oh, okay. Here. Wow.
Write it down, material.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I am stupid.
That's how the best ideas come to you, by accident.
What's in that vape? Just curious.
What vape?
Nothing anymore.
We should play a game. Tid, guess what strand she's smoking? I bet he gets it.
No, he's not.
Good. I'm going to say good.
Good strand, yes. Rush, shout out your socials. Let people know where they can get at you and what you got going on.
Okay, rushcazzy.com has all of my socials on there. If you want to just go to the website, you can click onto my Instagram, which is rush.zilla. My Twitter, which I don't know how to use yet. I don't understand it. It's just rushzilla. Okay, my Facebook is my name, which is rushcazzy, R-U-S-H-K-A-Z-I. Which, if you just add a .com, you'll find all the links and stuff. My TikTok, yeah. Rushzilla again. But yeah, I want everyone to come to my show on Thursday. Okay? It's called Asian Comedy All-Stars. It's at the Rivoli. There's a karaoke thing right after that I am hosting. The karaoke is free if you can't afford to go to the show itself. But I have, you know what? If you use the code FB25 at checkout, you'll get 25% off the show. So, you know, check that out.
So tickets available on rushcazzy.com?
So if you go to, the tickets are available there. But if you go to asiancomedyallstars.eventbrite.com, the ticket links are also there. And that's where you use the promo code. So
that's Thursday, okay. May 26th.
Yes. Cool. Thursday, May 26th at the Riv. And we have Frank Nguyen from Tall Boys headlining. And Ali Bacha, who was one of the people that inspired me to do comedy when I was 15, is a featured act on there.
I've shouted out those Tall Boys guys. I'm offended that I have not been invited into the Tall Boys. As Toronto's tallest boy, I'm 6'7.5".
Okay, but Goulet is taller than you.
Wow.
Yeah, okay, whatever. I can
I'm saying he's one of the tall boys.
That's why he throws in the half.
Yeah.
At 6'7", do you have to throw 6'7.5"?
I think I was 6'8", but I think I'm shrinking as I get older.
All right. I think is it just because happening. You're like hanging your head in shame for not being the tallest tall boy after you claimed that you were?
I know I'm not. I'm just fine.
Okay.
Listen, I coached basketball for 20 years. I've coached so many guys that are way bigger than me. Way bigger. Dan, you reaching her show next week?
I'll have Melina.
Ah, okay.
That is not an age appropriate show.
No, I cannot bring her to that show, Rush. I'm going to catch another one.
I was just going to say, just bring her, but all right, fine.
I know, no, not yet.
I'll do my best to represent for you, Dan.
Not yet.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us, Rush. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
and,
thank you, Rush.
Everyone, go check out her show next Thursday at the Riv. It's a great venue.
It's in 1 week, 7 days.
You're in the greater Toronto area. Make it out there. And yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendous.
Keep it up, bro. Proud of you.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, guys.
You got it.
Much love.
Thank you.
We'll have you on again soon, okay?
All right, yeah. Let's do that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Rush Kazzy, everybody. Go check her out online, rushkazzy.com. We are late, folks, so we got to wrap this one up. Tid, Dan, final thoughts before we say goodnight?
I have one thought, and that's it. Be better, people. Just fucking be better.
Well said. Poignant, powerful, well said. Dan?
No, I second what Tid said, man. I'm with you.
On behalf of my bro Danny O and Notorious P.I.D., special thanks to Rush. Thanks to all of you for hanging out with us tonight. My name is Donnie DeSilva. Remember, the video archive of this program is available on godfathersofpodcasting.com. Buy our merch, support us, do what you can do. Check out Rush's show next week. Don't forget also that you can go check out the band that we interviewed last week, AMH. They are touring Toronto and the greater Toronto area in Southern Ontario this week, next week. Go check them out because they're a lot of fun. This is episode 100 and we are done this party. We'll see you next time.
Okay, bye.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. Mm-mm. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
No thanks.
Don't mind me. I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Alright then.
I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of here.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.